Welcome to this week's anime podcast. This week we have a couple of new things to be talking about before we actually get ahead with the episode. First, I'd like to wish a speedy recovery to one of our former podcasters, a guy by the name of Ashin. He's very unwell at the moment, so we wish him a recovery, well, as fast as he can, given how serious it is. So good luck, Ashin. And good luck to his family. We'd also like to say that this is going to be the last episode of our second season. We're going to be taking a break for a while because we actually haven't taken a break in almost, well, it's a year now since we started kind of consistently doing podcasting. While we are away, we are still looking for people to be part of the podcast. So if you've listened to us at all over the last year, and you thought they need to do this or they need to do that, or I just want to take part, we'd love you to contact us. You can do that on Facebook, on Twitter, or you can email us at anarchistreadings@gmail.com. So yeah, we're going to be taking a break for a while. We don't know how long, not too long, but for a while, we all need a bit of a break. And yeah, so if you can contact us, if you're interested, or even if you just want to suggest topics or what we should do or stop doing, please do. This week, for our last episode, we're going to do something quite lighthearted. It is just me and James. We decided to do a topic which is close to our own hearts, which is toxic fandom, whether that be the histrionic screamings of people who take Star Wars too seriously, or anime in all of its many, many creepy tentacle porn varieties. And for this week, I am going under the Gypsy title, Standout Stan, for those who know what that means. And with me is James, who's going under the name Toxic Fannydom. How you doing, James?
How you getting on? Ending the second season how we started the first season with, endlessly talking about the Joker.
Do you want to know how I got these scars?
Well, if I remember correctly, we haven't actually released the first ever episode we recorded, because it was a test run. And we thought we were going to do it. That's back when the podcast was originally going to be a film analysis podcast, but then quickly turned out that Alex and Oisin just didn't understand film theory enough to be able to discuss it through the lens of anarchist politics. So we had to rearrange the concept of the podcast very quickly.
It's not my fault I was brought up in the era of Roland Emmerich. I don't understand complicated narratives, James. Look, at some point, does a building blow up? Because otherwise, I'm not interested.
In almost every film that the Joker has been in, a building does blow up, I believe, though.
It doesn't blow up in the 1966 Batman.
Some days you can't get rid of a bomb.
Or indeed a plot. Yeah, so what we're going to talk about, we're going to try and talk about, is fandom, and I suppose what it's become, which is often cases now kind of toxic, and we're going to tease that out in some ways, but we might begin with something very basic, which is kind of a mea culpa on both of our parts, and basically what is our guilty fan pleasure, and have either of us ever been part of a fandom, even if something vaguely adjacent to a fandom. Since you're far more invested in pop culture than I am, as exemplified by the fact that I used the term pop culture, which is something that hasn't been used since 1994. James, you go first.
Yeah, it depends what level of fandom that you mean, though. I've never been one for, like, going on forums and discussing characters and stuff at length on, like, internet culture, or, with people in life. You might talk about the framing of the narrative or the sort of the meta stuff that goes with a show or a film. But outside of like proper, films or literature, can't really think of, discussing, the depth of character in a Captain Marvel film or something like that. But yeah, there's some things that I keep a close eye on and pretty much will, unfortunately, watch most, if not all, of the media that's produced by it. Batman being a good example. I've seen all the Star Wars stuff, and I don't even like Star Wars. My mum is a big Trekkie, so I've got like an encyclopedic knowledge of Star Trek without actually liking it. And yeah, I'm sort of the same with like something like Doctor Who. Just like huge catalogue of knowledge that I just don't get to use and don't want to use in any way. But you just pick these things up by being associated with nerd culture.
For me, it would be not too dissimilar. I don't think I've ever been part of a fandom, because that would have required me to be social. And as you well know, James, that's not the top of my list of priorities or desires. I suppose the closest would be probably Lord of the Rings, because I was very into the books before the movies came out, and then the movies came out. But even then, like, it was, that's what, 2001 to 2003? So, or 2000, because I read the books in 2000. But there wasn't really kind of that level of internet forming, you know, that didn't really exist yet. Or if it did, it was not, you know, out in pop culture yet, or in the, amongst teenagers, or whatever age I was in, 12 or something like that. So yeah, I know I've never been part of that. And I really don't understand the kind of level of emotional investment that goes with it. I think we're going to be talking about that, obviously, but it's a huge part of why these types of groups have become toxic, is the type of emotional investment people have made in these types of characters. I mean, for example, I don't, and I can for the life of me understand people writing fan fiction. Now, one of my favorite YouTube channels is a guy called Regretful Reads. And he reads like really disturbed, like cartoon porn, like Wario getting fisted by Captain Falcon and you know, Snape having sex with the Teletubbies. And it is funny, but I mean, it's terribly written. And it's, and but some of these things go on for like hundreds of thousands of words, and you just kind of go, I don't, it's a level of investment I don't understand. Like, it's almost a religious experience for some of these people. And certainly that's the case for things like Star Wars, and for things like the DCU, the DCU universe, or that's, sorry, the DC universe and the Marvel universe. Yeah, I mean, I suppose what we
probably... Yeah, but I think it would be fair to say, though, that your fandom and geekness is really in history, and that's, you know, one of our common interests. Now, you're quite nerdy when it comes to reading quite difficult texts about, you know, especially when it comes to Irish history and Scottish history. And like, you're not beholden to one specific time frame, but, you know, there's a certain period of time that we both share a fair interest in when it comes to history. And that's sort of how it manifests for you. It just happens to be when you do that, it's sort of, at the moment anyway, has more of a it's more accepted. It's more like, oh yeah, well, if you're really nerdy into history and understand that, then you've actually got some sort of social capital that you can use. For example, you know, you can go to university like you did with Trinity, but there's not much difference between, you know, you reading about fancy men in obscure Edinburgh pamphlets from the 19th century and its use on day-to-day life than someone that knows like exactly, you know, which continent James Kirk was born on. Do you know what I mean?
But there's a difference, which is I'm not so emotionally invested in a historical character that if evidence appeared that this person was, you know, her, you know, something other than what I thought he was, that I would hang on to my previous belief. I suppose some of the reasons why modern fandom has become toxic is maybe it's a facet of any groups of, you know, any group think or any people who are in these types of groups, is that they become heavily invested in a particular strand or a certain way of looking at characters. So here's a good example, like, and it's the most obvious, pardon me, fandom to look at, which is the Star Wars stuff. Now, the view of the second sequel Star Wars movie, The Last Jedi, which I've seen a total of once, and once was enough, was that the problem with it was that it didn't do service to Mark Hamill's character, Luke Skywalker. And that the main character, the protagonist, was both a woman and what many fans said was Mary Janing, which apparently is some type of reference to a character basically becoming superpowered without any type of montage. So basically like Rocky beating Apollo Creed without having the montage section. And that was kind of their problem. And it's become very, very toxic to the extent now that effectively any fan, you're kind of caught on either sides. Either you're kind of a misogynist, or at the very least you're labeled one for not liking the sequels. Or on the other hand, you're ignoring some very glaring plot holes and bad scripting and narrative pacing on the other. You know what I mean? So as an example of that, that seems to me to be about people holding on way too tightly to these characters and what they think they should be, you know?
But those conversations that you're talking about at that extreme level only really exist on internet fandoms that are served like that, where the conversations about those films that exist in the media landscape that I exist in as a film reviewer are very much, it's more nuanced, more complicated, where, you know, you're talking about what went wrong with the trilogy, and it's more to do with things like, you know, you see the fan backlash more as from a distance, where it's like they lashed at the second film, which meant they hadn't planned a proper trilogy and hadn't stuck with their guns. That meant that the third film was more like a sequel to the first film, and the second film now doesn't fit within the trilogy because it didn't have this coherent movement that it was going for. And so that's why it's such an uneven and broadly terrible trilogy of films. Where what you're talking about is basically idiots on Twitter talk at that level, where most normal people are either not that interested to talk about it to that extent, or if they are, you know, they're a lot more nuanced about it.
Yeah, but we're talking about those people. That's the whole subject of the fucking podcast, James, is fandom. And we're talking about why, because again, and the fandom is becoming a much, much larger group of people. I mean, if you look at any of the video of the Comic-Cons that were, and even some of them were in Dublin, you know, beforehand. And I know there was one in Edinburgh when we were living there. It's become a huge thing. We're going to get to why we think it's become such a much larger section of the population. But that type of tribalism or sectarianism, whatever you want to call it, within fandoms or within fandom in general, is kind of the subject of the thing. So, I mean, why do you think, if you're looking at it from a further distance, but as a person who's kind of removed from it, why do you think it's gotten toxic in the way I gave an example of?
I think partly it's to do with the way that internet culture has been fostered, and the way that it like, one, you are allowed to be a complete asshole, and it's pretty much consequence free. Now, I broadly think that's probably a good thing in a certain amount, in the sense where I am obviously not for policing Twitter and Facebook and things like that to the extent that liberal press are more interested in, because they don't get like their names spoonerized when they're doing the propaganda for the state. But, you know, if you think about 90s internet culture, it was very toxic because the people sort of outside of society back then. And what has happened is these properties that were effectively a signal of outsider status, like Dungeons and Dragons or Spider-Man, have now been subsumed into the mainstream, and they've taken that culture with it and haven't really done much to try and take the fandom part of it and make it detoxified. I don't know where exactly that like starts and how it started, but when you think about something like when Tim Burton's Batman film was coming out and they said that Michael Keaton was going to be Batman, and then, you know, lots of people, and this is pre-internet basically, are sending in, you know, hundreds of thousands of letters complaining about Michael Keaton being Batman, that sense of entitlement that they have about a property that they consume and don't actually have any input in, other than, you know, buying what they like and not buying what they don't like, where that sense of entitlement is, I think, is quite an interesting psychological crux of it. It's like the kernel of entitlement that starts there is where you see the toxicity sort of emanate from.
Yeah, no, that's a really good example. And it, again, predates the internet. I can't think of an obvious other example from that early on, because I don't think people were writing in when Dick York took over from whatever his name, Sargent, on I Dream of Jeannie. People were like, hey.
Well, that's Bewitched you're thinking of there. Get it right, Alex.
Sorry, say again?
You're thinking of Bewitched.
Oh, sorry, pardon me. Bewitched. Yeah. There's a huge difference in the narrative of the two.
Yeah, one of them's a witch, one of them's a genie, dude.
I know, yeah. Both have really lame white husbands. No, but one of them went on to be the main character in Dallas. Anyway, we're now going off on a tangent. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. There's a kernel of kind of entitlement there that is odd. And again, some of the things we watched to research this is suggesting that has its roots in a kind of a very, as you said, kind of you're in a kind of small community, which is what fandom is, and there's kind of an emotional attachment to these characters that becomes so fixed that they can't see any other actor, any other kind of narrative but their own as acceptable, and they become very histrionic about it. There's also another view of it, which is that because of the death of God, and we talked about that in another episode about Nietzsche and about nihilism, that, you know, these types of fandoms are kind of becoming a form of secular church, or to some extent a kind of cult, depending on how deep the fandom is. But certainly if you look at YouTube videos and about, again, so let's just say Star Wars stuff or even, you know, the DCU, It is very like they have all the amount of hours they expend talking about these characters is kind of, I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't also sad. I mean, it's like, for example, there's this guy, I think he's called like Star Wars Theory, and he like has live streams every day. He does fan fiction. He spent like $100,000 doing a short film about Darth Vader. And of course, Disney took all the profits from it, and he wasn't surprised by that. But he eventually, when The Mandalorian came out, he was live streaming it, and he was crying. And one of the creators of Star Wars, of the Star Wars prequels, like, was interviewed and asked about it, and he actually laughed and said he was like a loser. And there's this all this huge, again, I'm kind of just relaying some of the ridiculous the behavior of Star Wars fans, but it does seem to me to be more religious. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost a religious, spiritual thing for people. Can you understand that?
I think that's partly right. Yeah, because with the death of God, for lack of a better word, and the community that, say, the church might have brought, and the community at large, I think you can pretty much map how toxic fandom is onto neoliberalism. And it's almost a perfect graph, because the more community and society breaks down in your day-to-day life, or, you know, your ability to move in the world and without aggravation, more and more people are now looking for those friend groups or those interests that they might have been able to foster by going down the pub, or, you know, at the community center or the church or in the theater, are now having to find that online. And that's definitely part of it. And the way that capital is sort of interested in atomizing different groups of people to fight against each other, and the only winner is capital. A good example of this would be maybe something along the lines of, it's not exactly fandom, but when Hasbro said that Mr. Potato Head was going to be gender neutral. Who fucking cares? It doesn't matter. It's a fucking toy based on a potato. But the usual people start shitting in their pants and producing free publicity for Hasbro. And Hasbro are the only real winners from that, because they've just got a lot of, you know, free publicity, and people are talking about Mr. Potato Head again, which they haven't been doing since the first, like, Toy Story film. And so that just kind of shows you how easy companies can manipulate these things. It's within a company's interest to rile up their fans by doing something that annoys them, knowing that, one, they won't lose them, and second of all, that they'll still buy it, and then three, that'll produce outrage that goes out into the wider world, and then people will be like, actually, I'll give that a listen. I'll see what that's about. A good example, again, recently would be the Snyder Cut. It's a complete marketing ploy to get a film that was dog shit by redo it again by someone that is also dog shit, and it's a dog shit reversion of the film. But they know they've got such a toxic fan base there that they'll spread this message of what they think this film is before they see it. And now people like me, and next weekend, they're going to have to be sitting and watching it, even though I fucking hated it the first time around, and I'll probably hate it again, but I'm so psychologically damaged and love to torture myself with terrible films that I'll, you know, I'm so morbidly curious that I'll need to see it again. And so, you know, it's fostered by the very people that own the IP as well.
But, like, I mean, this is a good point to try to raise something that is a kind of a feature. Oh, that's a train passing.
A man.
And a train. A train and a man. Yeah, so this is a good point to raise something which I did want to bring up with you, because you're the perfect person to bring it up with. Why do you think there has been such a huge difference in reviews of movies? So, like, for example, Rotten Tomatoes, IMDb, and a few other sites which are heavily kind of generated by fans or generated by people who just go on and leave reviews versus the actual, like, critics. So, like, for example, one of our favorite reviewers would be Kermode. I can't remember his first name. Mark Kermode, sorry. And he reviewed, I think it was... God, which one was it? Oh, he reviewed the last Star Wars one, the Return of the Old Guy, and he said, you know, it was all right. You know, it was a popcorn movie or whatever. But you know, the general consensus was it was amongst the people who were reviewing on Rotten Tomatoes, which was it was terrible. It was the worst thing. You know, it was an abortion. Pardon the phrase. And again, the Last Jedi, he was kind of like, this is an okay movie, and then the fandom was like, we hate it. What do you think is at the root of the differences between like reviewers, like professional reviewers like yourself, and like the response from fans?
I mean, this goes to a more central point, and I'll expand it back out. But I think one of the major issues that this comes from as well is the way that people are taught to interact with art. And this starts in high school, and unless you do media studies, and even now I imagine, even if you do media studies now, it's probably not great, but you kind of get taught in this very strange way to interact with artistic mediums in a very all or nothing format, because, you know, if you're at high school, you're going to have to write an essay about Of Mice and Men. And now my personal opinion of Mice and Men is like, yeah, it's all right. It's got some good bits. It's got some bad bits. But even as a reviewer, that would be difficult. All the worst reviews that you have to do are the films that you saw and you went, it's fine, which is most films. You're like, it's better to get a bad film where you can be like, right, I'm going to fucking kick the shit out of this film because it's so bad. Or you get a good film where you can sing its praises. So, you know, at high school, you're going to have to take a very divisive view. You're either going to be like, oh yeah, Of Mice and Men is one of the greatest literary novels of all time while you're exploring it, and or, you know, it's terrible and here are the reasons why. What I should be teaching you is, as you delve into Mice and Men, you might either start to like it even more as you delve into the characters and the themes and maybe understand the history, or like it less to see that it's, you know, it's maybe a little bit facile in its depictions of certain characters, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not what happens. It's very much just, you know, depending on how good your teacher is, it's going to depend on how much you learn to study media and what you're going to get from high school. And so people then start to conflate their personal opinion on a work of art as something that is either morally correct or that it is an absolute truth. And people don't like to be challenged either. And a lot of people, as we're seeing, you know, they don't have the ability to deal with being challenged or made to feel uncomfortable in any format. And instead of just like being able to emotionally distance themselves and be like, actually, you've got a point there, or no, this is why I think that it is a great book or novel, they effectively see that, you know, if you say something like Harry Potter is shit, it's somehow in a personal attack on them because it's part of their personality rather than their personal taste in books. Side note, Harry Potter is shit. And if you're over 12 and you're reading it, you're an idiot and read something for an adult instead.
Can I butt in and ask you an additional question with that? So yeah. I mean, we can go into, it's kind of, without, you know, I don't really understand like thoroughly why it is that people have a problem with kind of challenging narratives. So like take any movie, usually there's, you know, it's an adventure movie or there's a journey of some sort, or it involves a protagonist overcoming a challenge. That the point of the challenge is it's not meant to be fucking comfortable. Otherwise it wouldn't be a fucking challenge and there's no fucking narrative arc. The whole point is to make you uncomfortable. Like there's lots of, for example, here's just to take one movie, Silence of the Lambs, you know? Some very uncomfortable things in that, and some things that we're no longer, you know, if it came out now, people would not accept. But the whole point is you have Clarice Starling living in a kind of man's world of the FBI, you know, gross guys looking at her, pawing at her, you know, psychopaths kind of, you know, tempting to eat her, tempted maybe. But in the very end, you know, she catches the serial killer in a very kind of claustrophobic, terrifying way. Like, to me, I don't understand if someone says, oh, I don't want to watch that because it takes me outside my comfort zone. Like, oh, just as an example, I'm not saying there's lots of people lining up to say, I don't want to watch fucking Silence of the Lambs because it makes me uncomfortable. But you know what I mean? I don't understand why people would have a problem with a challenging narrative. That's the whole fucking point, you know?
But that's it. Most people know that if they feel uncomfortable in life, that they're... they're so out of control of their own life, most of us. If you're made to feel uncomfortable, it usually means that things are going to go sideways for you. And so it's a psychological mechanism to try and keep control of what's happening. If you're in your 20s now, like you've basically got no prospects in life. You know, you can't buy a house. You're going to find it very difficult to settle down with a family. But you know what you can control? Is you can control fandom. You can control someone else's behavior on Twitter by saying, like, actually, the fact that you like Batman means that you're problematic because that means that you, like, think that billionaires should be, you know, going out and beating poor people. And that gives you a form of control that you actually can exert on people where you don't have that control in your own life.
See, that, I think, is the most important point we're going to bring up, which is I think, or we think anyway, that, and other people have mentioned it as well, that the type of fanaticism, hysteria about superhero movies and shows and games, etc., and fantasy media in general, says a lot about the world. It says that the world has become so chaotic in many people's eyes and so violent and so abusive that people have actually retreated into these self-contained worlds where they do, as you said, have a degree of control, whether it be through Twitter or whether it be mobbing people. For example, Gina Carano was fired from her Mandalorian job because she said a lot of really ridiculous, these horrible things, and they said they got her fired. And there's a degree of control there in this kind of narrow way. And I think you brought this up before about other things, that I think you've brought it up in regards people who are trans on Twitter, that there's very little, or maybe it wasn't you, it might have been ContraPoints, pardon me, who brought it up and said that, you know, there's very little in trans people's lives that they can control, given the way the world is, you know, and turfdom. Whereas this is one tiny area where they do have a degree of power, not even a lot, but some. And it actually says a lot about the world that people have, so many people have retreated into these fandoms, into these self-contained worlds. And if it's toxic, maybe it's toxic because it's people's whole worlds. It's not just one's love of Gandalf that has brought you to an online forum. It's that you have completely subsumed yourself through Discord, through whatever, from fucking Reddit, and that it's your whole life. Like you kind of, you know, like and the if people disagree about that, it's not like just disagreeing, okay, Gandalf is a great character, a bad character, or whatever. It's an assault on the one area of your life that you have control over.
Yeah, exactly. And there's also just this secondary weird thing that happens as well, where, like, I mean, I think everyone should be an artist, really. One, just to see how difficult it is overall, whatever it is, writing or painting or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, as we've always said, I'd rather go see something that was original and shit than derivative but all right. But we would, you know, usually be in the minority in that, I think, because most people don't like to be pushed outside of the comfort zone again. But, like, you can only really create art for yourself, and that's all you can really do. But other people seem to think that they have some sort of moral authority of what you can produce. And this happens to me, say, doing stand-up, where at the end of a show, it doesn't happen too often, but it happens enough for it to be a talking point with other comedians, where people are saying, like, I don't think you should be doing this, or you shouldn't be saying that, you should be saying this instead of just being like, oh, that was good, that was or actually that is, I've got some notes if you're interested in it. It's this, like, I'm owed something by your art, even though I've come into this place for free out of watching you, and you're producing this comedy that takes you, you know, hours to write, hours to rehearse and remember, but I'm owed something by it, so you have to please me specifically. And it's such a weird way to go about things. And I think Alan Moore says it perfectly when he says that you shouldn't give people what they want, because if they knew what they wanted, they'd be an artist. And you need to give them what they need. And that sort of idea of art is pretty much gone out of the window now. It's effectively, almost everything is bowing down to fans. It's either, you know, like the last series of Game of Thrones was terrible for a lot of reasons, but one of the most annoying things about it was its fan service in it. You know, same with, like, the Snyder Cut. We don't fucking need it. Like, it was maybe a nice idea to imagine what it would be like. It'd be a nice idea to imagine what, you know, Total Recall sequel would have looked like before it became Minority Report with Tom Cruise. Doesn't mean that I actually want to see it made now. It's just a nice idea to think about. And so, again, it comes down to capital. Like, they should be making films for themselves, or for, you know, artists, et cetera, et cetera. And they shouldn't just be going around, like, saying, like, well, fans like this and they don't like this, so that's all we're going to do now, and we're going to get rid of this other stuff. But they're not interested in being artists. They're interested in being capitalists.
Yeah, and that kind of feeds into the kind of, I suppose, no, not the dynamic, the kind of the polarities that have emerged between kind of the companies of Disney, mostly, that produces this stuff, whether it be Star Wars or the MCU, and the fans, who are kind of split into different kind of, obviously, sects. And again, it's kind of that weird kind of toxic relationship between capital saying, you know, we're going to produce this thing, and the fan going, oh, we want you, you know. A good example would be Batwoman series, which I've not seen, so I do excuse me, anyone who's listening to us who's seen it already. But the original casting was considered to be problematic because they got a white either bisexual or gay woman, and they said, oh no, she needs to be a black lesbian woman. And so she left after the first season. They got an actress who was both black and gay, and the series is not doing very well in terms of ratings, and there's this huge kind of, you know, disagreement online between the fans, are saying, well, that she fills the definition of what we want this character to be, and that's, you know, because that's what they think, and the company, the producers, who say, well, this is making us no money, in fact it's costing us money, so we're not going to be doing this anymore, and they're going, there was a very strange lack. I mean, it's weird because it seems to be simultaneously very political but not political. Like, I don't think, like, this is something I've been thinking for a while, that the lack of any type of sense of class or awareness or any type of sense of how the world is working has really affected how people go about analyzing what the issues there are. I would say the big issue is that why can't these movies be made without enormous capital involvement of Disney and these big companies and the IP, etc. Like, I mean, if you want to make those movies, then that there should be a world where those movies can be made. And as you said, they'd be made for the art of making them, not for the profit. But I don't think a lot of these fandoms really go into any type of analysis about how these movies are getting made or why there seems to be this kind of weird kind of tribal focus on, oh, it needs to be exactly this, you know? And it's completely lacking any type of broader structural analysis. And again, that's, maybe I'm being a snob, but have you noticed that?
But that's it, though. They're infantilized. Now, I'm not saying, you know, every fan of everything is an infant, but that's broadly what it is. And if you want to see a fucking perfect example of that, the Harry Potter fandom is, one, incredibly toxic fandom, and second of all, like, just chock-a-block with the stupidest people on the face of the earth. And that's because, you know, they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, like, discussing a book, a bad book, and objectively, you know, if you were to go to university to study literature, everything that we base what good literature is on, it's a bad book considered to Western canon. And they're obsessed with it in a way that, like, if you were a 12-year-old child, would be a little bit weird. But you're in your 40s and you're wearing a Hufflepuff t-shirt, like, you know, saying vote for Biden. And it's because they're infantilized. No one's ever, like, sit them down and be like, yeah, look, this is what the real world is like. And, you know, it comes to, like, and the part of the reason why it's such a toxic fandom, maybe not in the way that they're sending death threats, which some of them do, but more in the way that their culture is within liberalism, they're so detached from reality, and most of them don't actually have to deal with it. Most of them don't actually have to. They're rich enough or middle class enough where, you know, the realities of the world don't really affect them too much or too badly. And so that's where you get the, let's just get back to brunch, you know, Harry Potter fans and things like that. And it's just the same, you know, like, you know, if you're in your 30s and you're obsessed with Batman and the Joker and things like that, like, that's fine. If you're doing other things with your life and you're, you know, you're reading actual books for actual adults and integrating with real films, but that's not what capital is interested in you doing. It doesn't want you to go out and read proper novels or engage in politics, because you might start getting some good ideas that way. They're much, much more interested in keeping the population basically teenagers for their entire life, because that way they're a lot more easier to manipulate. They, like, the spurious bullshit that churn out, you know, if you can't tell the difference between a good Batman film and a bad Batman film, how the fuck are you going to be able to tell what is real news and what is fake news? And so it's just like a completely fostered and perfect, just perfect culture to just keep people distracted from what's actually really happening. And again, that's not to say it's like, you can like these things, that is fine. There's no issue with it. But you also like have to be an engaged citizen in the world in many, many assets. I don't want to be that. You know what? I'd fucking much rather like not have to be doing this podcast and listening about politics, reading up about politics and reading the news every day. I'd rather that we were in a world where that was fine, but that's not the world that we live in. And it's a world that needs to be made better. And it doesn't happen by, you know, knowing Jar Jar's family history. It happens by engaging in the world and going out in the streets, et cetera, et cetera.
It's kind of a, you kind of, Wilder mentioned something, which was that the type of media one consumes obviously plays a big role in this. There's a study which I'll post at the bottom of the podcast. It's about the importance of long form kind of fiction. And now the name of the, I think that in the study it says it's literary fiction as opposed to pop fiction or whatever, or nonfiction actually. And it said that it has a role in creating what's called theory of mind, which is, or affective theory of mind, which is basically empathy and understanding the complexity of how other people have different ideas. And as long as they're not, as long as those ideas aren't, hey, let's put people in concentration camps, that, you know, things are nuanced and complicated. And I've always felt that, you know, and Potter is a good example. The fact that people really didn't read any other books. Like, I mean, I remember being a teenager and reading Christopher Hitchens writing a review of Potter. And he said, as long as this leads to kids reading other books, I'm in favor of it. But if it doesn't, and this is the only thing they read, that it's a very, very bad thing. You know, I think he even said it'd always be better if they didn't read anything else. You know, if they didn't read it, they were not going to read anything else afterwards. And I do think that the fact that so many people, you know, our generation and younger, don't really read any type of long form complicated fiction where people's internal monologues are, you know, sometimes rather unpleasant, people's internal monologues are explained, does have a big role in the kind of the black and white all or nothing views of a lot of people who are in these fandoms, Potter being the most obvious. But, you know, I think most of us know that most villains don't wear black clothing with black hoods and have evil faces. Most are actually smiley, wearing suits, and they know what buttons to press and what things to say. And I don't think any of these, the fandoms I can think of at the top of my head, have been well prepared for that world, you know. And I think the death of that type of long form fiction for a lot of people has been the death of any type of nuance and how people look at the world. And again, that could be, you know, people like ourselves who know something about media, navel gazing a bit, saying, oh, well, you know, it'd be great if people bought more, you know, if they read Anna Karenina or if they read fucking whatever, you know, the Brothers Karamazov. But there's a lot of, you know, shorter books than that, which I think maybe provided people with a better idea of the complexities of these situations, and that good and evil aren't really something that exists outside of, or not in the same way anyway, outside of like comic books. You know, that in the real world, your villains are going to sidle up to you and agree with 90% of what you say. And it's in the 10% where they're going to turn you towards really shitty, horrible things, you know? Like the people who love Harry Potter, but yet don't seem to understand that, you know, people like Boris Johnson or Nigel Farage, they get in not by, you know, cackling and tying women to railroad tracks, but by talking to a certain section of the population in the ways that comfort them, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a big part of it, is the rush to the bottom when it comes to what capital produces and why it produces it in the entertainment industry. Now, you know, we can look at a different couple of fandoms, but Batman's a good one to go to as well. Like, there is no reason, and really, why there can't be, like, good Batman comics or films or TV shows that are very complex and, you know, deal with complicated philosophical ideas or morality, et cetera, et cetera. And some things have attempted that. And I think that's partly why it's one of those franchises that does a little bit better, because it has got stuff in certain things that give you things to chew over. For example, you know, The Dark Knight. Now, when that all came out, we thought, fucking great. Here's this dark, complicated version of Batman where it shows him as a fascist. And it's, you know, it's tongue-in-cheek and it really gets into the heart of, like, what a nutter Batman is. Turns out a little bit later that that's actually just what Frank Miller thinks, and he's a fucking nut job. And apropos, that's what Snyder thinks as well. He probably sees that Batman of the Dark Knight Returns and goes, I like him. He's what we should have as a leader. But that's not what they're interested in producing anymore. Now it's just like, make sure it's sanitized, make sure it's not complicated, and ensure that it, you know, reaches the broadest amount of people with the most amount of appeal, but with actually the least amount of substance to it. And as a society, I think, and yeah, honestly, it is part of my job as a reviewer and as someone that knows a lot about, you know, film especially, but different forms of media, is, you know, you're meant to be someone that raises this stuff up that is good. You're meant to be like, look, you might like this film. Okay, well, here's a better version of that film, and it's more interesting because it's, you know, it delves into this theory, or it's actually, you know, an adult film for adults rather than what, you know, the hell you're watching here. But that's, again, like starting to disappear from the media landscape as, you know, people like me who are a little bit older or, you know, really got an interest in like actual cinema are having to leave this industry for whatever reason. And the people that are coming up below us have only been weaned on the Nolan trilogy or the MCU, and, you know, think that the height of, you know, something like Breaking Bad is a good example of Breaking Bad's for teenagers, where The Wire, that's for adults. And which one is more, you know, accepted and produced in society? It's Breaking Bad, because it's easier to understand, and it's a non-complicated morality tale. Where The Wire actually requires you to, one, remember a shit ton of information while you're watching it, people's names, et cetera, et cetera. Second of all, like, things happen off screen, so you need to remember and use your imagination. And you have to deal with the complexity of the real world within that. It's like, you know, the good guys are not just good. Most of them are actually, you know, all right, but they're doing things for bad reasons. And the bad guys are not just bad. And, you know, The Wire's talked about a lot, and it has got some credence to it, but fuck, do you ever see the number one slot of, like, greatest TV shows of all time? Do your bollocks now. It's almost starting to fade into the distance.
One other thing we should probably bring up before we start wrapping it up is that I think part of this kind of complicated analysis of why fandoms are or have become or whatever toxic is the power of kind of just groups. And given the fact we're anarchists and we talk about the idea of self-governing communities and self-governing workplaces, and it would be wrong to not for me not to bring up the obvious point about the difference between what I would like to see and certainly at least in some form and these types of fandoms is one is built on the idea of citizenship, and commune, whatever. It's built on you being an aware, involved, independent figure who is involved in the running of your community, your workplace, whatever. The difference between that and a fandom is enormous, because a fandom is following basically almost a religious or spiritual personal connection with these types of characters. It's much more of a religious thing, in the sense that faith and belief are the primary motivators in these types of communities, and that's why you get these kind of enormous hysterical fights over stuff that really doesn't matter, in the same way that you had all these enormous and ridiculous fights between the Christian churches, you know, 400 or 500 years ago, which led to millions of people being fucking butchered and slaughtered over stuff like whether the communion bread was literally the body and blood of Christ, you know, versus just a communion wafer. You know, it's that ridiculous. And I do think it's the fundamental difference between those who believe in democracy as we see it, which is actual democracy, where people who are in communities run their own communities and have that power, and the power to make bad decisions, but also the power to make, you know, good ones as well, versus these types of fandoms, which almost to me seem like they are powerless. They're features of a society which is deeply undemocratic, deeply oligarchic, and deeply toxic. And you know, their toxicity is probably as much a part of that as anything. And if people are listening and go, well, you know, groups of people in communes or in groups, whatever, they're going to start being toxic. The whole point of these types of communities is you don't ever invest power in anyone for that long. The old saying about power corrupts and total power corrupts totally. There's also another quote from the same author, which he said, great men are invariably bad men. And he said, this is somebody writing in the late 19th century. And I do think it's true that you should never invest power in anybody for particularly long. It is a corrupting and dangerous thing to do. But that's the whole very fucking nature of what we believe in. That, you know, we understand that power is dangerous, and we understand that it has to be shared and it has to be dealt with carefully. But these fandoms are powerless, which brings a whole other type of toxicity with it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's a good point. It's also worth pointing out on our way out as well, is this what we're talking about is as fucking true as politics as it is anything else. Now, we're specifically talking about, you know, pop culture fandom. But, you know, people's adherence to the Labour Party on its wing and shitting their pants that, you know, people are calling Keir Starmer, are, you know, seem to get generally upset when I put on a mask made of ham and dance around in my kitchen doing a bad impression of them. Like, what is that, if anything? You know, not what I'm doing, that's just me because I'm weird, but it's, you know, getting that upset by that is a sort of fandom, because I've put too much weight into thinking that Keith or the Labour Party is going to achieve something, or, you know, maybe a little bit tankies or a sort of fandom when it comes to Stalin, or you definitely see it within the anarchist community and certain things as well. Like, it's like this all or nothing mentality that so many people have now. It's just unhelpful. Like, you can take, you know, there's like obviously problematic figures in anarchist history, and you can take the good ideas and leave the bad ones at the door, where some people were basically like, no, the bad ideas were so bad that even the good ideas are just not acceptable. You can't have them. And so I guess that's a sort of like reverse fandom, or a fan for whoever they are. But we're not a clean slate when it comes to this on the left, and especially the left on podcasts or Twitter or any internet format.
Agreed. Definitely the cult of Starmer amongst centrists, or even the cult of Corbyn, which you have talked about before. The refusal to recognize that he was the wrong person with the right policies, you know, which we can say because we don't have any type of investment in individuals. There are no gods, no masters, which is liberating, but is also very isolating. The whole point of, I think, maybe of anarchism, and why it's always been a minority kind of movement, is because it demands you to make your own mind up and to challenge figures who tell you what you should believe. And that's difficult. I think it's a difficult thing to do. It's easier, and society prepares you for taking your direction from messiahs and from leaders who will tell you how to think and what to feel. And again, that's, you know, there's no easy answer to that other than you just have to do the hard work, the hard graft of thinking for yourself, as uncomfortable as that is. And some of us were given advantages in life. In early years, I was socially ostracized by many people in my school, so I had to learn to think for myself and to, I suppose, while away my time as people ignored me and didn't and bullied me, which is nice. But actually, there are, you know, even for people who had normal childhoods, normal parents and normal friends, you know, you can't, you know, just abandon all your responsibility to a figure like Keith Starmer or on the other side, Corbyn. You have to think for yourself. And that's just something you're always going to need to do anyway. And the sooner you get over that and you start behaving like a citizen or you know, a person in your community, whatever you want to call it, the sooner you'll stop reading fucking Harry Potter and thinking that some guy, speckled guy who lives underneath the stairs is going to save you from some dark lord, which is plagiarism anyway. But anyway, on that note, we'll probably wrap it up. James, do you have any last thoughts about fandom and toxic kind of fandoms?
Yeah, I think that's about it, really. I mean, I think it's just worth pointing out that, again, there's nothing wrong with being a fan of something. And obviously, this whole was about toxic fandom. And, like, I'm all for sending death threats. I think there should be more death threats to Tories and landlords. That is what this podcast is about. But if you're sending death threats about, you know, like, drawing Jar Jar's ears wrong in Star Wars, or, you know, getting annoyed that a character is black in a recast, then you're not sending death threats for the right reasons. You should only be sending death threats for the good reasons.
That's so reasonable, James. And by death threats, he means just photos of kind of bills, like literally DEPT, that type of death.
Death threats in Minecraft.
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, yeah, so that'll be us. For those of you who've listened through, and there are some of you who do listen all the way through, hopefully you enjoyed our take and you've enjoyed our second season of the Enemy podcast. As we said at the beginning, if you do have any advice for us on what topics to do, what maybe to, if we're going to reboot the series and do it slightly different going forward, please do contact us on Twitter, on Facebook, on anarchistsreadings@gmail.com. But otherwise, that's going to be us for a while. We'll put up a notice on our media when we are planning to get back with our third season. It will be somewhat different. We don't know how yet. Still talking about it. But it's been goodbye from me for this second season. My name has been many different Jitsi handles, but this week I've been Standout Stan. And it is also goodbye from Toxic Fannydom, otherwise known as James.
Goodbye, folks. Enjoy yourself.
Okay, guys. We'll see you when we see you down the trail.
Down the old dusty road.